I'm Rhonda Hamilton on Jazz 88 WBGO, and it's a pleasure to welcome Grammy Award-winning vocalist Diane Reeves. Diane actually has won multiple Grammys. As a matter of fact, she made history when she became the first singer ever to win Grammys for three consecutive recordings. So it's always a pleasure to see you, Diane.
Nice to see you, too. Nice to be here.
And your fans are going to have the opportunity to see you at the Apollo Theater. You're going to be there on Valentine's Day. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're planning? I mean, is it going to be an evening of love songs or what?
Absolutely. This new record that I have coming out in April, this will actually be a debut of the material and all the material, songs of love and just, I think it's appropriate for the evening. Plus, I'm looking forward to being there and doing all of this new music.
Well, what are your feelings about performing in such an historic place where so many legends have been on that stage?
I know. You know, I've been to opera houses, sung in opera houses all over the world, and everyone talks about, you know, the great composers and classical musicians that come through there and how they, you know, left their feeling on the walls and, you know, and it's just these perfect places. But I feel the same way about the Apollo. You know, I've had the opportunity in the past to maybe do one or two things, but never with my own band. And so I'm really excited because I know what the history is of the Apollo, and I know the people that have walked across that stage and done amazing things. So I'm just really, really excited to be a part of all of that.
Yeah, as soon as you walk into the lobby, they have that mural with all of those
yes.
Great paintings of the folks who have been at the Apollo Theater over the years. And the surprising thing is that it's really a very small place. It's not it's not big. It's kind of intimate for a theater.
That's what I love about it, is that people really can see you, even from the balconies. All the sight lines are exceptional. So I'm looking forward to this.
People really can see you, and they can hear you, and you can hear them as well.
Exactly.
Well, tell us about this new CD.
Well, it's called When You Know, and it's a journey of love in a lot of ways, because I actually recorded two songs on the record that I grew up listening to, because for me they represented a kind of innocence in love, and that was Just My Imagination, which I've always loved that song by the Temptations. But another song, Loving You, which is the Minnie Riperton song. And the reason I did it, I was on the road. I had the opportunity to tour with Homero Lubombo and Russell Malone, just the three of us. It was an amazing tour. Although I have to admit that I went kicking and screaming because I didn't think it was going to work.
Just two guitars.
Just two guitars from two different places with two very, very strong voices and me in the middle. And it was extraordinary. And, of course, Russell knows every song ever written. And so he said, you know, you ought to sing this song. You know, nobody ever does it, but it's a great song. And so every time he would, you know, say, try this, try that, we would, and it ended up sticking, so we did it. And so this album is a collection of songs that represent all phases of love, and at the end, the last song is When You Know, and I put that there because it's, you know, love is something, I guess, greater than you know, loving ice cream and all of that. So once you get through all the phases, you realize that it's higher and stronger and the most powerful thing that we can have on earth.
Yeah. Well, you know, one never tires of hearing
love songs.
You know,
yes.
I mean, you think you could get bored, but there are so many different ways to write about it.
Yes.
And it's something that every human being can relate
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And then there's that higher love as well. I mean, do you sing about that on the album?
Yes, I think it kind of comes through in the song When You Know, because it's about that. It's about the greatest love, you mm-hmm. know, because I believe God is love. And at the end of the day, when you practice that, you can make all kinds of changes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned singing songs by Minnie Riperton and The Temptations, and you've always included a lot of different kind of material from various sources mm-hmm. in your repertoire. And you've even been criticized for being so eclectic.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself a jazz singer? When you think of yourself, I'm Diane Reeves, and I am what?
I really do consider myself at you know, my foundation is that. I mean, everything that I think that I know that I approach, I give it a jazz sensibility. And the reason is because jazz is such a living music. When you see it, it's what it is in that moment. And I love the fact that I have, you know, musicians that I work with that are not a backup band. I've never had a backup band. And that, you know, they're co-creators, and every night is something really special and new and fresh. And so, yes, you know, I'm a jazz singer, and I sing all kinds of music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that. You have worked very intimately with the musicians that you've performed with.
Mm-hmm.
A long relationship with Billy Childs for a long time.
Long time.
Also, Peter Martin.
Yes.
And who is in this band that you're going to be bringing to the Apollo?
Well, Jeff Keyser is going to be in the band. Jeff is just absolutely fabulous. And my longtime friend, my soul brother, Reginald Veal on bass, and my drummer for a long time, Greg Hutchinson, and Homero Lubombo is joining us for this. So. Yeah.
So you're going to be bringing a little Brazilian feeling to the
music
as well?
Absolutely.
Well, what is the experience of working with Sergio Mendes and people like Harry Belafonte, with whom you worked early in your career? How does that influence the choices that you make now?
Well, I think both of them, in working with them, they're always wanting to expose you to other kinds of things, you know, that you've never heard of. And I remember when I was with Sergio, I mean, I knew a little bit about Brazilian music only because of Wayne Shorter and, you know, with Milton Nascimento and all that. But he introduced me to all, and of course, Jobim, but he introduced me to all kinds of writers and directors of film and just what Brazil is, you know, at the time that I was working with him. And the same thing with Harry. I mean, we were performing music from all over the world, which was really exciting. Folk songs from different places in Africa and Greece, and you name it. And he, you know, would say, listen to this, check this out, this is wonderful. And so all of those things for me, I said, well, you know, it's about the things that you say and what you bring to it, and always, like I said, bringing a jazz sensibility. But there's all kinds of music out there, you know, to perform.
What is it that first attracts you to a song? I mean, is it the rhythm or the melody, or is it the lyric?
It's really the lyric. Mm-hmm. I like to be able to tell a story, and I like to find something that is, you know, that I understand, that I know about, or want to know about, you know. And so song, you know, I think that because of the fact that you can take a song and rewrite the harmony so that it really, really addresses the lyric and the melody, we have to change the melody. For me, the lyric is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Some singers, when they're performing, prefer to lock into a particular instrument. It might be the bass for some, or the piano. You talked about not really, being hesitant about going out on the road with two guitarists. Is there a particular instrument or sound that you key into when you're performing?
You know, it used to be early on the drums. They were always the instrument that would drive my emotions. But now it's just working with great musicians because, you know, everybody comes with their own harmonic vocabulary. And I'm like, when I hear certain things, I react in a certain way. And I love, you know, the new things that I'm always like blown away that, oh, wow, I didn't realize I can, you know, I could hear that or do that or sing in that way. And that's what happened with the guitars. It was a very relaxed, intimate exchange that came between us. And what happened was I have a very, very broad range, but I really stopped using the high parts of my voice. And when I went out with the guitars, the sound of the guitar and the way that they both play, both electric and acoustic, it's like my voice is as high as it was when I was 25 years old, and I was using it, and it was really, really great. So all of those kind of things that I got from working with them, was reacquainted with myself with again, I took those and put them on the new record as well, because it was just a whole other way of singing.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Diane Reeves. You're listening to Jazz 88 WBGO. I'm Rhonda Hamilton. You've won many Grammy Awards for your album In the Moment, which was a live recording, and your tribute to Sarah Vaughan, The Calling, and a little Moonlight with Romero Lubombo on that recording.
Mm-hmm. And for this, on all of them.
Yeah, for the soundtrack of Good Night and Good Luck. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone that you're most proud of out of all the Grammys that you won?
The Sarah Vaughan record, it was really a labor of love. I remember when I asked Billy to do the arrangements, it was huge for us. And I remember walking down the streets of New York, and he would call me on the cell phone and say, what do you think of this? And I would be listening to something he would play, and it's like, well, you know, I'm going to want to do this there or this there. And so they were just really like the perfect arrangements for me. And sometimes he would feel a little nervous, so he called George Duke, who was producing it, and George said, man, you know, Diane, you know, you guys have been working together since you're 19, just go on and do it. So having George, who is an impeccable musician, having Billy Childs, having Patrick Gandy, who's a wonderful conductor, conduct the orchestra. And then when we got into the studio, a lot of the string players, they would come. Usually they don't really come and listen, but we were like, come and listen. What do you think? How does it sound to you? And made them a part of the process. And what happened was a lot of those string players had played on dates with Sarah. So they came in with stories. A couple of people came in with videos. And so it was just this magical experience that happened for all of us. And I thought, if I don't ever get another Grammy, I really, really want this one too, because everybody just gave their heart and soul in this record. And I was very, very thankful when it did.
Did you have the opportunity to see Sarah live on occasion?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Any opportunity that I could get, I would go and see her. As a matter of fact, one of the stories in the is the fact that when I first went to Los Angeles, it was around 1975, George invited me out. George Duke invited me out. He said, come on, hang out.
George is
my cousin.
Yes,
yeah.
He's your cousin.
He said, come on out and hang out. And, you know, so they were doing this tribute to Cannonball Adderley. I tell this story all the time. It was so funny. And so he had me backstage, and I knew Stanley Clark. I didn't know everybody, but I knew they were, you know, were big jazz musicians. And there was this woman sitting on the sofa, and it was Sarah. But I didn't know it. And I went over and I talked to her, and she's like, what is your name? I said, Diane. She said, what do you do? I said, I sing. She said, well, what do you listen to? I said, Sarah Vaughan, you know? And she said, really? So I started telling her all about Sarah. And this guy came back, and he said, Sash, you got, you know, 5 minutes. And then I kept talking, and he said, Sash, you're on. And I remember she got up, and I still, even when I tell the story, I can still feel like, I can't believe it, but I couldn't believe it. It was something in her profile. But, you know, after she came off stage, I just hid. It was nowhere to be found.
It's amazing. Well, I guess you spent so much time listening to her, it hadn't occurred to you that there
well,
she when is right
I,
in front
and
of you.
Also, when I discovered her, she'd been singing for 25 years then. And she had all these records, and she looked different on all of them. And it was just about her voice. And for me, the one record that I remember that my uncle gave me, one of the first ones, was with Michelle Legrand and strings. And the way that she, you know, used her voice and the sound of it, that was the thing that really made me know that, you know, you can really have all kinds of different sounds, and these sounds can really address certain things in the music. At that time, I didn't know what, but it was just obvious that, you know, that they were there and well thought out, and that she really understood her instrument.
Yeah, she was someone who definitely had full command of her voice. She could do whatever she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you've listened to other singers. Ella Fitzgerald. What do you take away from Ella?
Joy. Mm-hmm. Just pure joy. The joy of singing and being there and really understanding that the stage is a sacred place where amazing things, things you can't even explain, happen communication between musicians, that the language is music, but sometimes it's comedy in that language, you know. And so when I listen to her, I think of that. But I think one of the people that really, just really inspired me the most was Betty. Because the very
Betty Carter.
Because the very first time I saw her, I was like maybe in my early 20s. And I had a band at that time, it was me and Billy and a couple of, they were saying, you know, Betty Carter's in town, you should come see her. I was like, I don't know who she is, but okay. So I went, and I had a religious experience. I mean, I was a wreck when I saw her, because I'd never seen anyone stand in a band and just take, you know, full command, and really, you know, was where I got, you know, that, you know, they're co-creators, and the music and the musicians were an extension of her sound, and, you know, just the chances and the courage and all the things that she did. And so I remember trying to, you know, slow those tempos down like she could do, and with my band after I saw her. And I was so lost, but it was okay, because I just would continue to try it, you know, and just really stand in the center and be, you know, the leader of the band. Mm-hmm. And that's what she was.
Yeah. Well, you talk about the slow tempos. Betty Carter certainly could do that. Shirley Horn was another master.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Carmen.
And Carmen, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Carmen McRae. Yeah. Who to me is, again, one of the greatest interpreters of lyrics.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with you there. Mm-hmm. I listen to Carmen. I mean, just it's amazing the stories that she can say, very subtle things, you know, a very, very subtle tone. And you really, really get the huge meaning of what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Diane Reeves. Diane is going to be on that sacred stage of the Apollo Theater where Ella Fitzgerald and so many other giants have performed on Valentine's Day, or Valentine's Night, I guess we should say, February 14th at the Apollo. An evening of love.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, it's always great to talk with you. And what are some of the projects that you're working on now? Because I know you've done, you know, a lot of very interesting things.
Well, right now it's just really been, the focus has been on the record and getting ready to go out and start touring on it. But that's the biggest thing that I've been doing in the last few months.
Mm-hmm. And this record is due out in April.
In April.
You were saying.
April 15th.
Okay, tax day. Well, if you get one of those early refunds, that's the first thing you can purchase is Diane Reeves' new CD. We were recently up in Canada at the International Association for Jazz Education, and I met a lot of inspiring young artists and singers in particular. Do you have any advice for young singers coming up now wanting to sing this music?
I would say you have to refine and define, respect and protect. I sound like Jesse Jackson. But I really believe this, your voice, and know that your voice is not the instrument that people hear, but your soul. And know that's when you have to make the connection between your instrument and your soul, and keep working on that and really make it the best it can possibly be. Because we live in a time now, I mean, for me growing up, it was all about being unique. It was all about, you know, you could have all kind of different singers, but they all had their own thing. And one of the most amazing things in this world that we know is that, you know, God has made all of us totally unique. Nobody has anything like, you know, you do. And I always tell young singers, so develop that, because there's no one in the entire world that has what you have to offer.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Diane Reeves, for all that you have offered us, and that sharing of your soul, which is something that doesn't come right away. I mean, it's something that you continually work on.
Absolutely.
During your career. And one of the things that amazes me about some young singers that I've listened to is that they haven't heard Ella, or they haven't heard Sarah or Carmen. And it seems to me that might be something that's important as well.
I mean,
to listen to all of these great artists who have, you know, led the way and Absolutely. Gone before us. And, of course, Billie Holiday, we can't leave her out as well. And we can't leave out Diane Reeves.
Thank you.
Listen to Diane Reeves on Jazz 88. Her new CD, as soon as it comes out, we'll be sharing it with you. And you can see Diane in person February 14th, a great way to spend a Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.